Coming up on today's episode, amazing new footage from the Perseverance rover, $50 million have been raised for thermal energy storage, and Blue Origin, like an hour ago, revealed new footage in the New Glenn.
Finally.
Ludicrous, let's get. Hey there, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool future stuff happening today that's going to make tomorrow totally ludicrous. I'm Joe Scott from the Answers with Joe YouTube channel, and with me is Tim Dodd.
Are we NPR this week?
Hi, yeah. It's very breathy voice.
Hi, it's me, Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut from the WCPBA studios down here in Mid-Atlantic, Georgia or something. I don't know. With us, as always, is Benjamin Solanus.
Mid-Atlantic, you know, that's the accent they made up in the 50s for like the housewife kind of scene, right? Or was it the bougie New York women? Is that what it was?
Very Katharine Hepburn.
Yeah. But it wasn't a real thing, right? It was totally. Anyways, hey guys, I'm Ben Solanus, the everyday astronaut. And today, if you're not going to say it, I have to. As with us always is our Discord family. How are you guys doing today? Man, there are a lot of you now. This is
hey,
so
Discord.
Fun.
Yeah,
hey, yo.
Great.
Andy yeah. Swifty.
Dusty's Ferron, get Swifty, Andy
Jonesy,
Law, Rob
Karadaf,
Speed.
Jonesy, Mystic, Paul Rez, Rob Speed, Rowdy, Sean,
hey,
Tion,
yo.
Tremor, hey. Cool.
All right, and if you want to be one of the cool cats and kittens that get to listen and watch this train wreck of a podcast live, you can do so by joining and signing up at olfpod.com/Patreon. We really do appreciate it. It helps keeps the lights on here because, you know, all the other things don't really do that. And if you live in Texas, you know, like Joe and Tim currently, you know, fortunately their lights are still on thanks to you guys on Patreon. Without you, ERCOT would have not pulled through this one, I don't think.
Geez.
So, and if we're going to cover a lot of stuff today, it's going to be a long episode, like always. If you want to just jump to a specific story, check the notes in YouTube there. You can jump around and we'll put timestamps of all them. So that way you can kind of get to what you're here for and then move on without
get
your day.
To the meat.
About your day. Without
show
your day.
Show me the meat.
Yeah. And with that, Tim Dodd, show me the meat.
Well, I should mention, although I am physically in the location of the new studio, I'm not in the new studio room yet. So by next week, it will be done version 1.0, which is good enough for streaming. And then it's just still going to be a lot of work from there. But yeah, I can't wait, though. I cannot wait for you guys to see.
So you painted the wall behind you and then you decided that you don't want to be in there anymore, or...
Pretty much, yeah. Well, also, some of the walls in this place just needed a lot of work. Like, there is the previous owners of this place had just, they didn't know what a stud finder was. So literally, there's places, one of them, the worst offender so far is 10 holes trying to find a stud.
Oh, jeez.
So
and
wall,
you know, there's like a distance you can just measure how far it's going to be. Once you find one, you can just kind of guess or measure it out pretty easy.
Well, and the thing is, it's near, you know, we're near a beach here, obviously, like, you know, South Padre. So like every wall has to have 45 seashells and it's a code. Every building in this area has to have seashells and anchors and, you know, beach this way, signage and stuff like that.
Life's a beach.
Yeah. Bring your friends. I don't know. Beach your friends.
And toucan pictures.
Yeah. Hey, those are gone. That was, yeah.
I miss the good old days. The good old
I
days.
I do not. Hey, this will be fantastic once it's done. I've been working. I've been in Sawdust City for the last like week, basically. But what were you going to say, Joe?
So now you two can't.
Bum, 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 bum.
I'll see you guys
of
later.
Oh, man. Where do we start this week, guys?
You've got a lot.
I could just like rapid fire.
Hit me with it.
I think we better talk about the most amazing thing that. Okay, so I've been saying like this is the most incredible video ever. You know, like I feel like I've actually said that. Three things that I can think of was the Starship SN8. First time we saw that footage where you're looking like straight up and you're seeing Starship falling. That was one of them. The stage separation video from Rocket Lab, when they had that shot from inside the inner stage and you see the second stage taking off, that was awesome. That was definitely one of those. I'm like, this is easily one of the coolest videos I've ever seen. But I think the new title goes to this. NASA released video of their Perseverance rover. It recorded video through entry, descent, and landing with some very high quality cameras, and they were actually able to make videos of this and not just like, you know, still frames. And it's actually high speed footage. So the one on the left, what we're seeing here is the parachute deploying. So on the left is at 75 frames a second. So they're playing it back at 24 frames a second. So it's basically 30%, 30% speed. And we could see there for a second, the real time, but this is the heat shield falling off. So once it's under the parachutes, they deploy the heat shield. And
that
so
just
a
falls.
Camera.
That's just adios, right?
It's just fallen. Yep. And it's falling faster because it's no longer under a parachute. Mm-hmm. The cool thing is the heat shield maintained its proper orientation, heat shield down, which was good. They were kind of curious if it'd flip around and do stuff like that, on the way down, but it's maintaining orientation and it's falling faster. The scary thing is it's still, both of those things are still falling quite fast, because don't forget, Mars just does not have a very thick atmosphere. So it's falling quite fast. Now you're going to start seeing it pretty soon. It's going to detach and start free falling and do the part where it lets go of the parachute and gets ejected from the back shell, free falls for a brief moment, and then lights up its engines and just does this whole thing propulsively. And this is about the coolest part. This is definitely...
it's trying to find its spot, right? Is that what it's doing?
For now, it's still all just slowing down. And so at first, it's canceling out, the parachute, you're coming in mostly sideways. So the parachute's canceling out most of that horizontal velocity. And now it's more or less falling just about straight down. I believe by about this point, it was like 7 or 5 kilometers above the atmosphere or something. We're right about for it to release from the back shell. So now it's basically falling straight down. And there we go. Now it released from the back shell and it immediately does a divert maneuver so it doesn't fly up into the parachute, right? So it immediately kind of pitches over. Then it has to pitch over the opposite way so it cancels out its horizontal velocity. But now while it's doing all of this, it's scanning the ground using the relative terrain navigation system. So it's actually literally taking images and the computer's mapping out in high detail, because normally you only have the images from the orbit, that aren't, they don't show all the rocks, the size of the rocks and all that stuff. And here it is, it mapped out, it basically found a good logic that even got reported back, like it's got solved. And now it's just coming closer and closer. Now we have this view of it hovering. It's basically stopped. It is hovering just above the surface and it drops down the rover from the sky crane. So on the left here, you can see the rover from the sky crane's perspective in the bottom and looking up from the rover at the sky crane itself. Now notice something interesting. Did you guys, did something, in, is there something that stood out to you guys about looking at the sky crane when you actually are looking up at it? Is there something that's...
Did you just rewind it?
Yeah, I rewound it. Sorry.
Why can't I see the flames?
And yes. Perfect. Perfect question. Because the only things that come out of there is going to be... These are hypergolic thrusters. So the only things coming out of it are nitrogen and... Is it water vapor? I think it's just water vapor and nitrogen are the only byproducts, and it has nothing to react against or very few things to react against outside. So it's just totally clear.
Huh.
Totally clear.
Because there's no oxygen to light it on fire.
Well, it's on fire, but it's done being combusted by the time it comes out. So it is just straight up nitrogen and straight up water vapor.
Huh.
And then
crazy.
The sky crane flies away.
Yeet.
Yep. It yeets itself away. This is just incredible,
But where did all these people on Mars come from?
NASA had to fly them down there first. Look, this guy's trying to be Babak Ferdowsi. In the reflection, you can see a little bit of green from some other screen or something. And it looks like he's kind of got a little mohawk like Babak, but I don't think that's at all true. But yeah, this footage is just absolutely outstanding. Another fun note is the parachute actually spells "Dare to do mighty things." You'll notice there's this.
Yeah, right. It has like a pattern on it.
Yep. Yep.
And it has other stuff on it too, right?
I think it's just "Dare to do mighty things." But
I think the outside ring is like the longitude and latitude or something.
Oh, is that what it was?
JPL?
Of JPL, yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely like three rings in there of different, GPS location. That is so cool.
I know, because I watched Scott Manley.
Oh, I remember the days of being able to make videos.
Or watch videos.
Yeah, seriously. But yeah, this is honestly just about the single coolest thing, I think, that
when you watch this, the full video, which I assume we'll put the link there so people want to go watch it full screen on their own, there's some narration going on too.
Yeah.
And
you're hearing the mission control and stuff.
Right. But did they narrate that live, or did they narrate that after the fact?
They narrated it 11 minutes after this actually happened, but it was real time to them.
Okay, right. That's what I was confused by, because I kind of thought, like, on one hand, I'm like, well, by the time they got this footage, it was, well, okay, by the time they actually got to see this, it was like 2 days later or something, yeah. Right? Yep. Yeah. So on that hand, I was like, okay, wait a minute. So were they doing a narration of it? And if so, doing it days later, you would have thought they would just had somebody like in a microphone, like with a good quality, but it sounded more like on a headset, like live. So I was kind of confused as to when all that was going on, but that makes sense. So they were narrating what they were seeing from sensors and stuff as it was coming in, even though it had already, you know, happened Mars time or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously they didn't have this video. You know, it takes a long time to upload video like this from Mars. They use the high gain antenna. That's a directional antenna that is actually, I forget, for some reason, I'm always thinking they want to relay it. Relaying is not the fastest way to send data back from Mars. It's literally to point a dish straight at Mars and have the deep space network pick it up.
Hmm.
And that's
straight at Earth.
Straight at Earth. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty nuts though. I mean, just seeing this, I think this is the type of stuff that the public needs to see, just to finally grasp, or help them grasp, how insane this stuff is and how cool it is.
Well, so Curiosity's been there. When did it land there? Has it been 10 years?
It's been over, a little over 10 years, almost 10 years. I mean, yeah.
So think about how much cameras in our phones have changed in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much camera technology has changed. And it's like, I mean, I kind of intellectually understood that when it was going, that we're going to have better quality video, but actually seeing it, I was just like, oh my God, that's amazing.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. This thing is decked out with cameras too. I mean, they just put cameras everywhere, and probably a lot of that is because the sensors and the technology is cheaper to begin with. You could probably buy 8 cheap cameras for this, or better cameras than like 3 on Curiosity or something, you know? So
yeah.
I wonder too about how, if machine learning is going to help us at all here, like being with that many cameras, that many pixels, our eyes can only detect so much. I wonder if there's going to be ways that some kind of algorithms would be able to decipher this to be like, oh, that looks like there should have been animal tracks there, or like this could have been, you know, where water went or something like that. Because I think a lot of the discoveries we've seen are mostly just, as far as I know, just people looking at pictures going, oh, that looks like this. But I wonder now, with so much more high fidelity photos coming in, if we'll deploy kind of algorithms on it, or if it's not necessary. I don't know.
Well, I'm not sure if they actually will be doing like, they probably won't be sending back like videos all the time. They'll probably be sending back about the same amount of footage as Curiosity did, not always in the high resolution, but it's the option of like, oh, we better take a closer look at this. Let's crank this stuff out in high resolution. Let's drive up to it and see some parallax so we can see 3D basically. And yeah, we just have options now. And it's pretty crazy.
And has the helicopter flown yet? Do we know?
No, that'll be like,
it's going to be a while for that.
Yeah, like 1 to 2 months. probably more like 2 months. It has powered up though and done some system checks and everything, and everything looks good.
And that, remind me, it'll fly for like 90 seconds or something?
Yeah, like less than 2 minutes.
And it goes how high, like 7 meters or something like that?
I mean, Nick, it could go high. It just wouldn't be able to land. You know, run out of batteries. You just
max suicide power. Mission.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can yeet with this one too.
I mean, that'd be cool. Maybe once it's like done with its operational life, just one last go. You know.
And it's supposed to fly what, 10 times or something like that only?
They're hoping. I mean, it's everything's a bonus with that thing. If it flies once, cool. If it flies twice, cool. If it flies. You know, they're hoping for a couple, I think. But yeah, I had talked to some of the engineers in 2019, and yeah, they were like, you know, whatever happens is basically a bonus. So if I remember right, they were expecting, I think their low term of acceptance was literally 2, but I think they're hoping more for like 5 to 10 flights. Yeah. Mm. So yeah, pretty cool. Pretty darn cool.
Now, not to be negative, but they did have the EDL microphone that was supposed to record sound of the landing, and it did not work. Aww. But they do have a microphone that did record some sound.
Yes.
I should probably have that pulled up. It's not much to hear. It's just like a little gust of wind and the rover noise in the background, but it is the first sound ever recorded from Mars.
And it's also, you hear a ton of the like computers and stuff on it.
Yeah.
And let's see if we can hear it here. I have this pulled up now, but.
I don't think we'll have to dub it over.
Okay.
Oh, maybe.
But yeah, it's just a low rumble basically. They did have a version that got rid of the natural sounds of the rover, because the rover has like these like whirs and little boop, bleep, bleep, bleep. You know, type of sound. So, yeah, there's a little
I
bit
hope
of
that's the rover.
But yeah, it has some cool sounds, and that is awesome. So yeah, I thought that was definitely one of the coolest things I've seen in a long time, and maybe one of the coolest space videos so far ever. I mean, up there, definitely top five. You know, there's some moon landing ones that are pretty awesome, obviously, like early, probably top 10 no matter what, though. I think anyone would put that on their top 10.
Yeah. The moon landing has to be the
top. It's a video idea.
10 coolest. Ooh. That would be
10 coolest space videos ever.
Yeah. That'd be cool. Do it.
And you're not going to get copyright strikes because it's NASA. So.
This is true. Well, speaking of videos about space, I think my other big one this week, this just happened before the show. So I listened to it while we're setting up. I may have missed some information, so I'm sorry if I do, but still worth mentioning that the company that says nothing said a lot.
Said something.
Ooh. Yeah, so Blue Origin this morning. Oh, ow. They shared some awesome footage of their three different videos out of nowhere. They just dropped three videos. No rhyme or reason, really. Showing their launch complex and their factory, videos of New Glenn. The first one I'm showing here on screen, in case you're listening, is the one about the factory. And it, or not the factory, I mean the hangar at the launch pad. And it is absolutely massive.
God, you can barely even see the people on that shot.
Yeah,
at the doors.
I mean, it's hard to fathom how big this is. I have to remind people, if Starship wasn't happening right now, like if we weren't obsessively watching everything Starship, this would be the biggest, most exciting rocket being built, period. But we've all gotten spoiled by Starship and its ridiculousness. But still, yeah, we're seeing, you know, the launch infrastructure, the launch pad, the lightning towers, the world's largest and tallest water tower they built.
Really?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, again, it's hard to tell the scale of this stuff. It doesn't compute, you know. It's just like, oh, cool, towers and stuff. But if you are out on Cocoa Beach or Cape Canaveral Beach, you know, whatever that is, all that stuff, and you look north and you look towards Kennedy Space Center, all you see is this launch complex. It is, well, it's close, first of all. It is the, like the closest pad, but it is massive. It is so big. So, yeah, seeing hardware come, you know, and stuff actually getting done is great.
So was this a previously existing launch complex that they are now kind of refurbishing and making their own, or was it just a brand new one that they started with?
Correct. It is a existing, it is Launch Complex 36, which was an existing, complex before. Well, what did it launch again? I don't remember. Was it Titan? I don't remember, but it was an existing launch complex. Okay. The video we're seeing now is, basically like the building where they will kind of finalize the boosters.
Jeez.
It is big. Again,
ridiculous.
Just the booster is almost as tall as both stages. And a good amount of the fairing on a Falcon 9. Just the booster.
Yeah.
So the Falcon 9 is a big rocket. People forget that the Falcon 9 is about the same diameter as an Atlas V. When you look at an Atlas V, you know, kind of like the traditional rocket, no one thinks that's a small rocket. Like that's a good sized rocket. It's a very good sized rocket. The Falcon 9 looks smaller than the Atlas V, but it's the same diameter. It's just really tall. So the Falcon 9 is actually really big. It's just deceivingly. It looks, people just don't think it's very big. It's a big vehicle. New Glenn is like 7 meters wide instead of 3.7, so almost twice as wide. And just the first stage is about as tall as both stages of Falcon 9. So it's going to be crazy.
If an Electron could fit in the fairing of a Falcon 9, maybe you could fit a Falcon 9 in the fairing of a New Glenn.
You could probably fit...
maybe the second stage?
Well, for sure you can fit the New Shepard, their suborbital launch vehicle. You can definitely fit that inside of the fairing.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the whole thing, which would be really cool.
Well, that could make it orbital and not just suborbital.
They could. There you go. Just strike the whole thing.
No heat shield or anything.
It's just a new hack.
But yeah, some bad news though is that New Glenn, the net date. So here's the rocket behind them, New Shepard. That could fit inside the payload fairing. But the net, the no earlier than for the launch is now pushed back to Q4 of 2022. Which probably means 2023. If they're already saying end of 2022 this early, you know, 18 months, you know, 21 months out, that's bad news, unfortunately. That is not looking
great.
Wait,
so that's it? That's New Glenn right there?
That is New Glenn, yep.
How come this isn't Tim Dodd giving this tour? How come this is some...
This is Blue Origin giving their own tour.
I don't care. I want to see the everyday astronaut there.
Some
but that's
fun
what they
things.
Pay her for.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. She's Caitlin Dietrich is I think head of comms or on the comms
I'm
team.
I'm not trying to downplay her role. I'm just saying I want to see Tim Dodd there.
So can we just kind of take a second though and like, what was it last week? We saw a picture through a door,
right?
The most we've ever seen of a New Glenn, and
yes.
Here it is. Like that's.
Yeah.
There it is.
Good call.
That's a big deal.
Exactly. Last week, we're just like excited to see a tiny glimpse of these fins up here.
Yeah.
Maybe that was it. They were finally like, okay, fine. Here you go.
That intern left the door open, so now we got to do a video.
Make this video. Now, what we're seeing here on screen is, you know, New Glenn, but this could very well just be a Pathfinder, you know, something to test their stands, test their, how they move it around, all this stuff. It's likely, It is a Pathfinder is what Discord's saying. Again, sorry, I didn't really have a good chance since we were setting up the show to be able to watch this morning. But yeah, this is the inside of the actual factory right there at the Cape. And it's you can barely see the people underneath this. Remember, this is as big as 7 meters wide. You know, that's about as big as the S4B of the Saturn V, the upper stage. Not the first two stages of the Saturn V are 10 meters wide, but then it tapers to 7. So this is as big as that, which is nothing to shake a stick at. Just crazy.
So I think I know the answer to this, but let's just pose the question anyway. Q4 2022 is the earliest this thing is going to go up. Will Starship be operational by then?
Hmm.
Like doing commercial missions.
Doing commercial missions.
I mean, actually launching stuff, not just testing stuff.
I want your guys' opinions, and then I'll interject mine.
I mean, Elon said we're going to have people on Mars in 2 years. So, yeah, obviously.
It'll be landing on Mars by then. I think at the very least they'll have some orbital flights under their belt. I don't think crewed missions will be happening for quite a while, but
yeah.
Yeah, I still cannot get my head around a crewed mission where the thing lands propulsed or whatever you want to call that has to be years away, man. That has to be 5-6 years away. Because, I mean, even you see Falcon 9 doing its propulsive landing, which we feel pretty confident about, and then, oops, you know, that's...
just failed a week and a half ago.
1 out of 25 is not an acceptable failure rate for having humans on board.
No.
So...
even the space shuttle was better than that.
Oh.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was. I mean, 98.5.
And it was the deadliest ship ever.
Yeah, so...
I mean, I hate to say that because I love the space shuttle, but it's true, you know?
Right. Well, Trevor has a good point that the Falcon 9 is not redundant, but of course, Starship is completely in development right now. So Starship, of course, has... you know, multiple landing engines, but there's some things that just will never have redundancy. Like if your valves, you know, your header tank doesn't work or you catch a leak here or there. I mean, there's no second chance with Starship, you know?
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Sorry, but Get Swifty has a good question. What's more redundant on Starship than Falcon 9?
Mostly just the engines.
Yeah. Just that is it because they're throttleable? Or there's more?
No, because the Falcon 9 only lights the center engine for the final landing burn. Right. I mean, they've done some that are like center engine, and they light up the other ones for more deceleration. But you have to land using that center engine. There's no, if that engine fails on landing, game over.
They can't light the others to compensate.
No, they cannot. Do that. So the Starship, though, you know, will always light those three engines for the flip and then shut down one of them right away. And then even after that, it will still shut down another engine, most likely. Mm-hmm. There will be some engine out capability on Starship, which hopefully, I mean, obviously Starship has a long ways to go before it's reliable enough to even make that sound like a good idea, because it just feels like it's a really, really long ways away from that. So, but as far as what we'll get to orbit, I definitely think Starship has a chance of getting to orbit. I still think. I don't think it'll get to orbit this year in 2021, personally, just seeing how long the stuff all takes. You know, aspirations are one thing and their aspirations are insane. but just seeing, you know, like we were hoping 2 weeks ago that SN10 could have maybe launched, you know, and then we see this every time I get on the show and go, well, I think it's going to happen like maybe this week. Every time we're just not to that point yet of they're figuring out how to build them at a rapid pace. And we're seeing that and we're getting excited for it. But we're not to the point of seeing them fly it at a rapid pace and hit the milestones they need to get to orbit yet. So I'm still thinking 2022 will be first orbit of Starship.
And reentry.
And reentry. Yep, the whole profile, basically.
SSTO and all that.
Not SSTO. It'll be using a booster.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
To go to orbit, it'll always use the Super Heavy booster.
And so, that will have to come land on its own. Well, or be bear hugged by some crane. I don't, dude. I mean, some of it is so.
Still gotta build that.
I mean, is this how everyone felt when they first were launching? You're like, oh, we're gonna land it on a drone ship. Everyone was like, ha, ha, ha. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, is that how we all feel right now about? You're going to have a catcher's mitt or whatever. Catch a booster. Like, 100%. We're not talking about a fairing here. We're talking about this mega giant whatever, you know, BFR.
100%. I mean, we've seen this over and over. Every Wile E. Coyote idea that they come up with, they end up doing. And you just talked about two more things. We could just make this a whole, like, rapid fire.
And still, I wonder why the on the Tesla side, why the battery swap thing never happened, because that seemed a little bit Wile E. Coyote, but like, oh, that would be a fantastic idea and solve all of these problems around charging times and blah, blah, blah. You just pull into a station, beep, bop, bloop, and you're off with a fresh one, you know? And then everyone was like, oh, I don't know, they got a patent on it. And now companies in China are doing it. So you're like, okay, maybe that was a good idea. Yeah.
What I don't understand about the battery swap thing is, I mean, who owns the batteries then?
You don't. That's the thing. Yeah, there. It isn't a thing. It's not, you would not be responsible for the battery, right? If you went and drove it to hell and destroyed it, which you can totally do. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they could measure the state of it before you got it, the state of it after, and be like, all right, Joe, okay, come on. Just tell us what happened,
you know?
But generally speaking, yeah, it's not something that would be like the current ownership model that exists. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And Tian K posted the snake charger thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that being a thing too. Well, and when there's autonomous fleets, I imagine there will be something like that.
Yeah.
I think wireless charging will be the answer because that exists. There are companies that make that. But again, I mean, I guess the challenge.
No, you lose 50% of your energy through wireless charging.
Like, if charging times are not... tinfoil hat on, everyone. If you truly have an autonomous fleet of cars that basically never need human intervention, although you don't have to go that route to start, but charging times wouldn't necessarily matter because you could just have more cars in your fleet. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I guess... Yeah, it's just kind of a dumb thing. Yeah, you're saying you lose the charge. So meaning I'm paying for 100 kilowatt hours, but I'm only getting 50. That sucks. That's a big loss.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So your electrical bill will go up double. Your strain on the power grid will go up double, basically, you know.
Yeah, it's not just the time you lose, it's the actual energy, which is just terrible.
Just
idea.
Gone.
So scrap that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know.
But speaking of stuff that we're talking about, so we were talking about Starship a little bit ago. I wanted to get through. So there's some big Starship things happening. They did static fire here on what was, I don't even know anymore. A
couple days ago.
I think that was, what day is today? Thursday? I think that was on.
So it's 23rd, so that was Tuesday.
Yeah, I think, but that might have been a day after the thing. It was the 23rd. Okay, the 23rd, they finally static fired SN10, but apparently one of the engines was suspect, so they swapped it out, which is basically probably nearing completion as we speak. The other thing that Elon talked, so that's going to probably delay, you know, we hopefully might see a static fire. We could see a static fire today on Thursday as we record this. I would guess we might see a static fire on Friday, which might mean they could fly early next week still, which would be awesome. I would love if they flew, within a week. That'd be awesome. That'd be good timing for me with the studio and everything. But that doesn't matter because the another thing that's pretty crazy. Toby Lee on Twitter asked, how long do you think the Deimos and Phobos rigs will be operational until they're operational? The actual floating platforms, the floating launch pads. And Elon says one of them may be in limited operation by the end of the year.
Hmm.
That I'm going to put on squarely in Elon time.
End of year. He didn't say which year.
You're right. End of yeah.
Well, what does limited operation mean? They're making hot pockets in there. I mean
it's limited float. Operation already.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely there's not going to be a rocket on it by the end of the year. No way. No way. But the good news is, you know, you don't have to have that in order to do the orbital launching because, you know, they are working currently on the orbital launch mount here at Boca Chica, which is great news because Mary from Boca Chica with NASA Spaceflight has some awesome video of the part of the orbital actual pad. That's kind of going to be the ring that's on top of those posts that we see sticking out of the ground for the operational orbital pad. So they're getting ready for that. They're also getting ready for a bunch of fun stuff. But one of the things that's really cool we are seeing we're seeing something awesome happen here. So notice this. People are going, you know, what are these things? Is this a different bulkhead? Is this a different tank?
So we're looking at like a little dome, half dome, right?
Yep. It's very similar to the bulkheads inside the tanks, but it's basically been, I don't know if like people were just speculating or what, but people were thinking that they're actually building the tanks for the launch pad out of the same materials, basically. Yeah. Because the orbital launch pad is going to require a ton of tankage, right? Mm. It's going to require huge amounts huge amounts of liquid methane and liquid oxygen in order to fill up a super heavy booster and a Starship. And those tanks are not cheap. They're not probably readily available. New Glenn took up what looks like most of them. The launch pad out at New Glenn literally has massive tanks. And SpaceX probably just like, you know what? Hey, we have all the materials here. So it definitely seems like they're making some tanks for themselves. And these are likely the top.
Could you make
those
floating? Or do you need to put them on the thing? Yeah, could you just like hang them off the edge, you know? Like tie them up with a rope or something?
Like literally in the water?
Yeah.
Well, for now, I think these ones will be for the tank farm at the ground pad. But eventually, I don't know if they'd... Because of you don't want to run cryogenic lines. If once the fuel's cooled down, you want that to be a very short distance, which is why we see the crazy short distance of Starship next to its, you know, tank farms, because you want that cryogenic run to be as short as possible.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it seems like they are likely building right there the tanks for it. And one of the ways you can, you know, it requires a lot of insulation to do cryogenic stuff, but one of the ways you can do that is just have a vacuum chamber in between, you know, have like two walls, basically have a normal one, the outside wall, and then an inner wall, and just have a vacuum in between them, and that way it is not able to conduct heat into the inner tank, just like some high-end thermoses and stuff will do that. But yeah, there you go. That's
cool,
probably the
man.
There's so much going on at Boca Chica, like just trying to follow it's impossible.
I've been too busy even here to like pay attention. You know, I haven't been out there for like a week and a half or 2 weeks now, which is insane. And it's already just like completely different. It's like, I can't even keep up with it. I'm right here.
That's why there's like multiple YouTube channels that's all they do.
Yes.
Just follow what's going on there.
Tim, exactly. Are you able to see the rocket Starship? I guess it's still pretty far off from your studio, right?
No, it's pretty close.
I was trying to think how cool you could like shoot a commercial or a skit or whatever, like put a bed in the studio and make it look like you're waking up as it's taking off. Like you're just getting up, you know, casually, and there's like a rocket launching in the back window. Just like you just kind of look out there, have some coffee. You know, and instead of
it
being like
that close.
Well, that's what I was saying, yeah. But instead of that being some like CGI nonsense, be like that is actual real footage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess yeah.
Production value.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Like, well, for today's shoot, we had to launch an actual rocket. You know, luckily we got it on the first take because
So this is the view from the studio. This is how close I am with a telescope. Boom. So
everything's close when you have a telescope.
Yeah, this is looking out.
Here's
the
moon from my backyard.
Look how close I am to the moon.
But you can see right on the horizon. You can kind of see, you know, with the iPhone, you can kind of get a sense of how big it is. And then with the scope, you can see.
I think you could still pull that shot off and just take your footage from the telescope, and then you know. Overlay it where the window is, or if there's.
And why am I doing
window.
This again? For
this is like just a good everyday astronaut intro. You know what I mean? Like a little intro segment to your video, where all of a sudden it's just like you're hanging out, and here's a rocket going off. You know, but it's real footage.
I mean, I could.
It's
do
like
that
the whole cool guys don't look at explosions thing.
Yeah,
like if like the action hero thing, you're walking away and there's this big explosion behind you, like just because of slow motion of you that's like walking towards the camera and the rocket's taking off.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm
like. You couldn't be bothered to look.
I'm trying to boost your ego even more, Tim. Okay, just let me have it.
Well, thank you. I mean, I really appreciate that. I need, obviously, more ego.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to talk anymore about stuff. Although, I guess we did have the... Should I mention, just while we're talking about SpaceX, this will be the last SpaceX thing for now. We're starting to see that they... So, we're talking about the crazy things that they do and how everyone laughs at them, like catching fairings. They are... We think they're going to be giving up on actually catching the fairings. That must not even really be worth it, but there still will be retrieving the fairings, because they've been highly successful retrieving the fairings, just getting, plucking them out of the water and bringing them back and reusing them. But we're seeing the arms on Mistree come down. So there's only two arms now. We also are seeing some of the actual ports on the fairing, the little vents, are in different locations on some newer fairings. Like they're a little bit higher up. Like they're making some changes to the fairings that are probably going to be more conducive and better off for, you know, to be able to retrieve out of the water. So
wait, but what do those ports have to do with water retrieval?
Like where the water gets in it or something?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure actually. We're just seeing changes in the fairing basically is what it's, you know, so it does mean they're kind of making some tweaks. Likely they, you know, have learned after recovering a good amount of them, how this could be better or worse or whatever. They moved them. And, one reason might be now is that would keep it out of the water, keep those vents out of the water.
Yeah.
Because they were basically around the perimeter. I guess I didn't even look at these yet, but I'm thinking to myself here, they're all around the perimeter. There used to be like 8 or 10 or something. So every, 36 degrees or whatever, depending on how many they are. And now the vents are right along the seam, basically.
Oh, I see.
So okay, when it's floating in the water, you wouldn't have to worry about, to not get water in there. So so basically, for those of you listening, not looking, imagine the two fairing halves, like your cups, like two hit your hands basically floating in the water. You want your holes, any holes, to be not below the water line. So they put them kind of along the like seam of the, the top edge or the closed edge of the fairings. So
I wonder what keeps it from rolling. Like I imagine the weight distribution is pretty even around the fairing.
Yeah.
So why doesn't it just like tip over when it does that? I wonder. Or yeah, I guess we'll have to see and find out. But I think that's actually they're making those mods for the Tom Cruise movie. He's going to be in space and then come back down on the fairing.
On the fairing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I would do that. See how gentle those fairings come back. It looks amazing. You could surf back.
How far do the fairings get? Because they have to go to low Earth orbit or no? Like how far before they're kind of jettisoned?
They're jettisoned at like 150 kilometers or so. So they're in space. Okay.
Yeah. But they're not. You don't have the atmosphere that you have to deal with, right?
They still contend with the same atmosphere, actually slightly higher velocities than the booster, but because it's a large surface area and so lightweight, they just gently come down.
Like re-entry.
Fast enough to burn up.
Right. Exactly. That's what they don't need like a giant heat shield in order to make it back intact.
Right.
Is what I'm saying. Yep. So in theory, you could ride one.
You maybe could. I mean, it might not be still very conducive for human life conditions without a meaty spacesuit or something.
Probably would need a pressure suit or something.
This Tom Cruise we're talking about, okay? All right? You've seen what he can do. We all know.
He can just hold his breath.
You could have Tom Cruise in one fairing and Jackie Chan in the other. He does all his stunts.
Perfect.
Man.
Yeah. So there you go, guys. That's a bunch of news for me. I want to talk about something else. Go.
Well, speaking of the clouds, being in the clouds, Tesla is now preparing to make your driver profile in the cloud.
Ooh. Does this mean that you could be having a rental car?
Yeah.
And you could just get in and it'll just be like your normal car?
That's exactly it.
You just get in and press a button and it just adjusts for you no matter what car you're in.
There you go. Yeah. So you see, I don't even know. I don't even have to tell you guys. This is just so apparently there was some notes here from Green the Only on the Twitters, who's a great guy to follow, a guy or girl, I don't know. To follow if you're interested in you know, some kind of hackerish Tesla stuff. And there were some notes, some, and what you're looking at here on the screen is the green. These are called comments. So when you're writing code, depending on what language you're using, you put these little pound signs at the beginning, and that means that your program is going to ignore whatever's here. And usually you put notes for other developers here of like, okay, what the hell is this thing doing? You know, because that way you don't have to decipher it. You just like wrote a little note. Typically it's like this function does this, but this is a more descriptive one. And it kind of describes the ability to put your profile in the cloud, meaning exactly that. Tesla could launch a car sharing, or this isn't exactly like the robo-taxi fleet where it automatically picks you up. Like, yeah, I guess that'd be cool to have your music playing or your settings on there. But this is more just like, imagine a car sharing program where you don't own it, like a Zipcar where you can go hop in and just take it for a drive. Mm-hmm.
Even a loaner car, you know, when right. You get a loaner, when your car's in repair, just picking mm-hmm. it up and...
Why are you thinking about that, Tim?
Don't remind me.
Why is that top of mind?
So from Green specifically, they state that Tesla is preparing to move profile items to the cloud. So when you get into any Tesla, your car profile migrates with you based on your phone app, I imagine. This includes games and other app settings such in particular. So
what if like Netflix and stuff stays logged in?
Yeah.
To, you know?
Yeah. Wow. So pretty cool stuff. I thought this was just a really neat headline that would probably get overlooked in a lot of the other news items out there, but is one that definitely leads to kind of a ludicrous future there where either we don't own cars anymore or the cars we do own, whenever we're yeah, that's the other thing. You know, you can just kind of hop in any of them and then it'll take over your stuff. I really like this idea as someone that buys a lot of Teslas. You know, I could just, every time I buy a new one, just hop in and it already has my stuff. But I know that's not a common experience, so I'm just not sure they're coding for that.
Can we replay that? Hey, Joe, do you want to just like break down that sentence again? As someone who buys a lot of Teslas.
It, you know, it flew over my head.
Someone who just buys and owns and operates, you know, a fleet of Teslas for my wife and I and our two small children.
Do you know how hard it is every time you get into a new Tesla to put your driver information in there and fix the seat?
It's terrible. Yeah. I mean, I will say this, though. It actually even just... Like, this is cool, but if it would just be able to detect that it's my phone in the car and switch the seat to my profile when I get in my wife's car, that would be enough for me to be happy.
Right.
Like, that seems like an easy win.
Well, I was thinking when you were talking about this, I was like, does this mean I have to know my Tesla account and password and have that with me all the time and get into a car and enter the password on that screen?
No, your phone should automatically do that.
That
for
makes
you.
More sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool, actually. You know, because that is one of those things a lot of cars, you know, you might have two keys, you know, for a couple or something. And, you know, that way when they're going out to their car, you know, you get it and it knows which key and it sets the driver profile to that. You know, that's been around forever.
Yeah, I mean, in the Model S and Model X, that's how it does work currently.
Oh.
Yeah. So, but the Model 3 and Model Y, for whatever reason, don't have that. So I don't know. You know what I mean? But the whole cloud-based thing is a bit interesting because it signals more on this like Uber Tesla type service. So exciting stuff. And, you know, this is just like one little glimpse into what the future could hold there.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, if you have a steering wheel preference or something.
Maybe the steering wheel could just change when you get into the car, like the top circle could just go away and you get a yoke
depending on which one you ordered. Does that update?
I said yoke, it's not an egg, it's
so on that front we have a little bit of news. We've seen a lot of leaks of the new Model S out there, and we know that it's it's been a controversial design, I would say, right? There's a lot of changes there, which I probably in a few years' time will be like, whatever. But right now, feel a little bit of like a who moved my cheese kind of feeling as you're like, what's going on? And so the yoke steering wheel is the biggest
one.
Well, it's
a saying.
If you worked in corporate America in the 90s, you're familiar.
It was a book.
Yeah, and then a movie, and then they... Anyways, long story short, go watch it. All the footage we've seen of the car being leaked have had complete steering wheels, full, you know, regular steering wheel, including the shot that Tesla posted of them winter testing the Plaid model. So everything we've seen so far, we've never seen the yoke. And actually, a viewer sent me his Model S configuration page, and it has the yoke steering wheel listed as a separate option. So that makes me think it's real. That we are going to see a yoke steering wheel. I don't know if they just haven't done it yet, or if it's something that, you know, we just haven't seen in a leak, because people are all over, you know, circling the factory all day, every day, and everything. So, so more to come on that, but it looks like the yoke steering wheel will be real, but it is an option. So for those of you that looked at this and said, how dumb is that? I would never want that. There will be an option for you. Okay, I don't know which, you know, we all know which camp I'm in, whatever. But point being, yoke confirmed. The yoke is no joke.
Yeah, baby.
Just waiting to say that.
So is it priced differently? Do you get a discount since there's not as much wheel there?
Yeah, right. I didn't see that in the screenshots he sent me there. So I don't know. I would imagine charging extra for it just because it's something different and non-standard. I still don't understand the purpose of it other than being less convenient. Like, why would I want this? I don't know.
Do you think, though, that the more traditional wheel is still going to have the weird turn signal stuff?
Yeah. So all the shots we've seen
no
of
stalks.
Correct. Yeah, all the shots we've seen show no stalks and turn signal and headlights and stuff, buttons. Now, I'm fine with all that. I just actually would like more tactile buttons because yes. I could very easily see accidentally pressing it and not knowing.
Please don't be like a haptic touch thing. I will be so upset if it is.
Yeah, like I would like to have a way to know that I have to click the button and not just accidentally turn my blinker on and have that old man thing, you know, where I'm driving with my blinker on, which is what I do anyways. But now it'd be even worse. So I'd be even more embarrassed, you know.
So real quick recap, what do you guys, yoke or no yoke? Yoke or circle? This is the old game. Why?
Circle. Okay. Circle for me.
Joe?
I mean, I feel like I would rather have a circle, but I also feel like I would need to... I've never driven a car with a yoke before, so I don't know. I might like it, I might not, but I know I like circles, so...
I could do the yoke in the Roadster. I could see that. Being like, yeah, this is a freaking race car, okay? Like, this is what you get. Well, but in a regular, S, like, come on, man. I just want... Yeah.
But Plaid. I was saying when we were talking about this the last time, it's like, but when I turn the wheel, I do this thing and I would like not be able to turn. I wouldn't be able to turn the wheel. And then I started driving around and I started thinking about where my hands are when I was turning because I was just thinking about it. And I was like, yeah, I actually kind of do. It would work. I would make it work. It wouldn't be that big a deal.
Yeah.
But I would want to try it first.
Yeah. I personally probably would love to do it just because I think it looks really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something different. You know, I don't know if that'd be that huge of a deal. The no turning stock things, I'm still like, what?
Yeah. And guessing whether you need to go forward or backward.
The damn auto wipers don't even work half the time. Right. Come on. Like there are so many things that are like, seem so easy that don't work. How could you put something so, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. That one scares me.
Yeah. We'll see, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I've been wrong before, believe it or not.
No. Yeah, well, should we take a little break?
Let's
do it.
All right, we'll be right back.
Hey everybody, we wanted to take a second to thank all of our fans out there who are supporting this channel and our individual channels. We wouldn't be anything without you. Everybody Astronaut, Teslanomics, Answers with Joe, thank you.
I mean, yeah, honestly, it's this community of people. It's your comments, your likes, your shares, your subscriptions. I mean, we really wouldn't be doing any of this without you.
And we really love when you guys join the conversation. Why Don't They Just is super fun each week where you submit your questions for us to try to answer as best we typically can.
We
wanted to let you know how to join the conversation via Patreon.
Yeah, if you are a Patreon member, you can join our exclusive Discord channel. You can also get early access to episodes, a lot of just other little small perks, but most importantly is our tight-knit community on Discord, because there's a lot of like-minded people that you can chat with live in real time, and it's just a lot of fun to see the community come together each week and listen to our recordings as we record it. That's my favorite part.
Yeah, and so anyway, if you want to join, you can go to olfpod.com/Patreon. We would love to see you there. Thanks again.
And now back to our ludicrous programming.
Well, welcome back, I guess. Are we back?
Hi.
We're back.
Welcome.
Are we live? Is this thing on?
I'm not a cat.
What? Why don't you just... Why don't we just...
How about we do a Why Don't They Just?
Oh.
Why don't they just?
See, you just got to be direct sometimes. It's the best it's the best way to go. Today's Why Don't They Just comes from Greg Sikora. Greg Sikora? Yeah, okay. So he tagged us and says, do you think guys Starship will... Hello. Do you guys think Starship will use something like this to land on the moon or Mars? And he connected to a NASA space flight thing from February 22nd, talking about Masten Space Systems Flight Illumina Array Spray Technique. Wait, Flight Illumina Spray Technique, or FAST, uses plasma spray process to inject particles into the rocket engine nozzle to coat the landing area just prior to landing, an instant landing pad. Huh. Have you seen this, Tim?
We've talked briefly about this concept, but I've never seen... I saw that tweet, but I wasn't able to click on it at the time. I haven't actually seen the imagery, though, but I'm familiar with this.
Ish. So it sounds like, yeah, it's just like you have these regular rocket nozzles, but they spew particles into it, and they basically just kind of paint the ground with what, like an aluminum? Yeah, alumina.
Hmm.
So that you have a landing pad that you can land on. See, aluminum. So my question here was always, like, if I'm not mistaken, regolith... when heated to a certain point becomes basically glass, right?
Yeah, probably. It's yeah.
So I always thought, like, you could probably just, like, sort of hover over it and heat up a certain area, and it would just kind of turn it into a plate that you could land on.
Hmm.
But this is actually, like, injecting particles into it.
I wonder how you would it be big enough? Like, I know the graphic, the little picture they made here shows that the size of it is much wider than the spacecraft itself, but I wonder if that would be true. Like, I'm worried that it would be not covering all the edges where the legs are, and like a leg would be, you know, tip it over or something like that.
I'll give my
lots of questions.
I want to hear let Ben, yeah, give your rundown. Why don't they just do this?
It just... So possibly, I think if they could perfect this, this sounds great. My concern would be that it wouldn't work perfect, and it would take a gazillion tries, and we don't have a gazillion tries because putting things in space is expensive. So I don't know. If there was a way to prove it out, like, this is guaranteed to work, I think they would probably go for it. But, like, you know, it's super costly to try any of this, so... how could you know that this is going to work versus, like, I guess if I'm thinking about it and I'm saying, okay, here are our options, and someone presents this, I'm going to be looking at those things. I'm going to be wondering, what is the chance of success versus the other thing? What's the cost of it? It seems cool, but being cool isn't, you know, enough of a reason to risk billions of dollars. So I guess I'm always looking at it from an economic standpoint.
Joe, what do you think?
Well, I want to return to the original question of just why have a landing pad in the first place? Like, what is the value of doing that? And I think, obviously, when I found out that the Artemis program was still going to basically leave a descent stage behind on the moon with the national team, I guess the Starship would be taking off all in one piece, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, it would provide stability for one thing. But the other would be it would keep it from kicking up rocks into the engines and damaging parts like that. But also, isn't there a slight concern that every time we land, we kick dust up and actually, like, sort of creating a dust atmosphere around the moon that's going to cause problems eventually? I guess the question becomes, is it better to do something like this, maybe even in the early stages, or just have people land and then go build something, like actually build something with some kind of 3D printing or something?
Right. So I'm kind of with you, Joe, and some of the things Ben's saying too. It's one of the things that we need to remember. I don't think, like, you know, if you're shooting stuff out of engines, it's not going to flatten it. So you need to still land in a relatively flat area. You know, it's not like this is magically going to just make everything perfectly. I mean, it might a little bit, but if you have a big giant rock or a big, you know, crevice or something, you still need to land in a place that is relatively flat, you know,
And level.
And level, exactly. Level-ish, or as level as necessary for your spacecraft. But to answer Ben's question, if your engines are on the bottom, the plume from that is really wide because it's not like this picture. It's not straight down icicles. It's just, it is because it's no atmosphere, like the exhaust literally goes infinitely in all directions. So it's extremely dissipated. So that does, obviously, you'll have more of it directly below the engine, and then it'll slowly fan out just the more and more, you know, off axis the thrust gets, the thinner the amount of exhaust will be that touches the ground. But I think this would be a good way to work. But again, yeah, I'm with Joe. The biggest thing I'm concerned about is kicking up dust and rocks and getting them at near orbital velocities and having them shoot around and blow up, you know, or hit something of value and importance on the other side of the moon or whatever. You know, I mean, this is a real concern, is like you could be hucking stuff everywhere, potentially almost kicking it into orbit and stuff. You know, it's pretty crazy. So I if that could help mitigate that, that'd be great. You know,
what if you could land a landing pad?
Yeah.
Like just land it and then you could land things on top of it.
That'd be cool. That'd be really
almost
cool.
like a heat shield or something, right? How you kind of let go of that, but something
like a drone ship,
or like Sky Crane, like people are saying in Discord.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Sky Crane it down and just put the landing pad down there,
and then have Sky Crane land on it. I'm just kidding.
So you would have a moon base, and off to the side is just like this landscape of yeeted sky cranes that are just piled on top of themselves.
Exactly.
Oh God, it's like the scooter version on the moon.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's really cool technology, and I would love, we're gonna have to figure out some kind of solution if we're constantly landing on the moon. Like, if this is a new economy we're opening up, we can't have it shooting dust and stuff at insane velocities all the time, you know?
Sky cranes are non-recyclable. Okay.
Well, like you said, I think I'd heard of this before, but I wasn't really familiar with it, and I'd never seen it imaged like this before. Yeah. So I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah. Same. That was super cool. Yeah. That's a good
one. What else you got anymore, or is that the only one today?
That's the only one I had today.
Oh. Well,
that's how it used to be. We only had one.
Yeah,
God, don't
true.
Get greedy.
We got spoiled by two for a little bit. What? You had a cool news story, though.
I could jump into that.
Yeah, if I recall.
Why don't they just make better energy storage systems?
Because they are. Dun, dun, dun. So Google, as we all know, or many know, is actually just a part of the Alphabet. What would you call it? Conglomerate?
Yeah.
Company? Anyway. Alphabet's the company. Google's one of their subsidiaries. And another subsidiary of Alphabet is a company called Malta. It's also an island. It's also a country. Anyway.
Yeah, that's my only problem with this. I'm like, every time you say Malta, I'm like, yeah. And there was like a famous journalist that was murdered there recently. So it's a funny, weird thing. Like, terrible naming.
Yeah, I don't know how they got that name. Yeah. I know nothing. So anyway, yeah. So they recently raised $50 billion. No, million. Sorry, that's a very different number. Raised $50 million in Series B round funding to bring its super long duration energy storage to market. And it does, it's a thermal energy storage. So I'll just have to read this or I'll get it wrong. So let me just read it. It says it uses grid power to compress air for storage in hot molten salts and cold antifreeze liquid. So it's like cold and hot. So I can make DLT. The heat engine later converts energy back to electricity for consumption. So this apparatus, in theory, allows for storing power economically on much longer timescales than is feasible with lithium-ion batteries prevalent today. I'm not that familiar with this particular apparatus and this particular method of storing energy. The idea of keeping the hot side hot and the cool side cool and then putting them back together and getting the energy back out. But that's really cool.
Yeah, I've heard of the molten salt thing before as like a really huge potential for this. The interesting thing they said there was that it's longer duration than lithium ion. Mm-hmm. So because I guess we're talking phantom drain essentially, right?
Yeah,
and
yes, yeah.
No matter what kind of battery you have, it's going to have some amount of that over time, and this would not be subject to that, if I understand it right. But the broader question I have is the scalability of it, because lithium ion, for as tremendous as they are, there is a big shortage, essentially. I mean, we not necessarily a shortage of materials, but the ability to make them. Because, you know, there's this pesky little California car company that's sucking up all the world's batteries. And then, you know, you've got Apple and Samsung and everyone else trying to make a gazillion things with batteries. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely limited on those. And so this sounds like an alternative that, while it may be better in terms of longer duration, if we can just make it more readily available, if the materials and things are easier to come by, I think that's a huge win. I don't know if that's true or not, but to me, that would be a big step forward here, is that we don't have to be like, oh yeah, let's power a city with, you know, little AA batteries everywhere.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's always the big question is what resources are involved to make this happen, and is it reusable and whatnot? This is saying that it's designed to work for 30 years.
Wow. Oh,
so that's pretty good. So yeah, just a little detail here. It says that they plan to have their first commercial project online in 2024 or 25. The core plant design would charge at a rate of 185 megawatts and be able to discharge at 100 megawatts for up to 10 hours.
Oh. Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it almost sounds more like a peaker plant kind of thing.
Right.
We could have used some of these last week.
Oof. Yeah.
did they ever figure out what the problem was? It was the power plants and stuff actually shut down because they weren't winterized, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It
and
wasn't the transmission lines or
two.
Yeah.
And we do have the on-air quote. I was saying 5% of the state is wind.
It's more than
it's
that.
Closer to 25% of the state is wind powered. The natural gas plants alone, though, are supposed to be able to handle 90% if they ramp them all up. It's just that normally they're trying to run off, you know, you want to run your grid as clean as possible. But the natural gas power plants are capable of 90%, but obviously when you have to shut them down because they weren't winterized, then they're capable of 50% basically. Yeah.
I think 5% was the percent failure of the wind systems, wasn't it?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I saw on my new favorite YouTube channel called Climate Town, which you guys absolutely need to go check out if you haven't heard or seen it. Raleigh Williams, hilarious. He did a whole video about this whole Texas thing, and it kind of brought to light. I think that was the, if I remember right, that was the number. It was 5% of them failed. But again, yeah, it has nothing to do with really what happened. It was more, hey, it's expensive to winterize our stuff, and you know, climate change isn't real, so whatever, let's not do that and let's just go party, right?
Yeah.
I was
paraphrasing. They made a calculated decision to not winterize, deciding that it's too rare of an event to really do that for.
And people are dead.
I said in my TMI video, the thing is, though, when that goes wrong, it goes spectacularly wrong and costs a lot of money. And the anger comes from who pays for that. It's usually not the people who did it.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, right? Like, I understand I think there is a reasonable argument for that, right? Like out here in San Diego, you know, a lot of our homes, particularly the older ones, don't have air conditioning.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't get really hot enough. You know, you have little gas heaters and they're dinky little things, but the weather, you know, for a millennia has basically been the same temperature, plus or minus 10 degrees. So I could see, like, why are we, it's wasteful to do that. But when you're talking about you know, extreme, like something that is a critical service where people are going to die if you don't get it, I would say we probably need to build out a little bit stronger than just the cheapest possible, most profitable way, mm-hmm. you know? And I don't know how far they went, but that seems just like maybe a bit profit motives over the purpose or the people or whatever.
Yeah. But the point is, if we had more energy storage solutions that were there and ready to handle, you know, grid downtime and
fluctuations,
stuff.
Fluctuations, yeah.
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 And we do talk about batteries a lot because it's just the big popular thing and it's everywhere. But there's so many different ways of storing energy. That's why I like the idea of this. And I don't understand it that well.
Yeah.
And I've only had a chance to read this one article before I went online and did a video about it. So that's
well, it's
kind of
like,
but it's
kind of like electric cars, right? How there's, we all love the Roadster and the Plaid Model S and all these like crazy, fast, sexy things. But, you know, we need the Fiat 500Es of the world too. Mm-hmm. You know, not everyone needs a Cybertruck, okay?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think energy storage is the same way. Like in some cases, lithium-ion batteries, they're fantastic because you need that instantaneous charge, right? So things like gas peaker plants and all these things take a while to get going and they cost money and all that, whereas a battery is like instantaneously able to deliver and balance that out. That's fantastic. But you clearly don't need that all the time. Right. There are plenty of use cases where it's not, you know, always necessary. And in that case, that's where you get into some of these other ones. So, yeah, I think I'm excited like you guys are about any time we see new tech like this. I mean, I'm still the most excited about the flow battery thing.
Yeah.
And I saw even someone putting out a home battery version of that. And it was really cool. But the only thing I hated about it was the whole thing they were trying to say was like, yeah, you know, those Tesla power walls are going to catch on fire and just burn your house down. So you don't want that. And I'm like, that's the marketing you guys are doing? Really? Like, yeah. I think your tech is cool, but geez, like lay off the, lay off the sauce there.
Never mind. The word isn't there.
Well, all the words have gone.
Of wasn't there. No, that's the worst segue. Okay. fun news coming from the other side of the world. China announced they officially plan to move ahead with their super heavy Long March 9 rocket. So you might be familiar with most of their rockets are like Long March 5, and you know, that's their biggest one, Long March. They have a Long March 7 that they're working on. But Long March 9 has officially been confirmed. And this thing is basically like Saturn V capable rocket. So it is massive. It's almost like a Saturn V meets a Soyuz meets SLS. It's more like SLS meets Soyuz. I don't know. There's four solid rocket boosters or rocket boosters. I guess I don't know if they're solids. On the sides. And then a very large like 9 meter diameter core.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, those side boosters are 5 meters wide. The side
Jeez.
Boosters are wider than a Falcon 9 by a lot. So, yeah, that might be more than a 10-meter diameter core and 5-meter side boosters, yeah. But it's capable of taking 140 metric tons to low Earth orbit, which can take 50 or more tons to lunar orbit. So it's actually more capable than the Saturn V. So if this thing gets online here relatively soon, but it's not planning, they're targeting 2030, but still, that's just plain bonkers. You know, who knows if we'll actually see that by 2030, but China typically actually does, when they say they're going to do something, you know, they don't really have profit motives and stuff like that to do it, so they just do it.
They don't have a lot of committees deciding these things. It's just somebody saying, we're going to do this. And it's like, okay, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
So if that was 9 meters wide, if each one of those boosters were the size of a Falcon 9, how tall is that thing? Did it say?
I don't think it has the height, but
oh, okay.
I mean, it's got to be up there at least as tall as the Saturn V. I mean, it is big.
Very does that deep. Matter in terms, you know, if you're building like a skyscraper, the, you know, that kind of matters, right? Just for the structural integrity. But does that matter on the rocket? Like, oh, if it's going to be, you know, 300 meters tall, then it better be 20 meters wide or something like that?
No, the height doesn't. It's not really.
Yeah,
I was just curious because it didn't look like it was 9 meters wide.
Right, right.
You know, it didn't look like a big boy.
So the fact chunky that boy. 10 is 10 meters wide. So that is wider. That's as wide as it's 10 meters wide. It's as wide as the Saturn V all the way up. All the way up. 10 meter wide fairing even.
Lord.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's a big rocket. So just thought that was kind of fun to share. Trevor in our Discord asking, how is it only 140 tons to LEO when it's that much rocket? I don't know. Maybe not the most efficient engines or something, but
they're really heavy tons.
Well, my guess actually would be the center core. If the center core is hydrogen, kind of like SLS, hydrogen tanks are huge. You know, the first stage of the Saturn V was RP-1. And RP-1 is much more dense. So if the Saturn V had a hydrogen first stage, it would have been just gargantuan. So, okay, it's not that tall.
Hmm.
Yeah, like 93 meters-ish. Ish. But still, that's crazy. Yeah, kerosene-fueled first stage, I guess. That's nuts, and hydrogen upper stages. Yeah. I mean, that'll be awesome. That will be awesome. But speaking of awesome, we have some exciting news. The Inspiration 4, the contest that you guys literally could, right here, anyone listening, and Joe and Ben and Discord, anyone in here, you can literally still apply. There's still a few more weeks left. If you guys want to go to freaking space, go to orbit, be one of four people inside of a Dragon capsule. I mean, this is pretty crazy stuff. But the Hope seat got taken or got announced. This is Haley, when she was a bone cancer survivor. Now she works at St. Jude. She got her life saved basically by St. Jude Children's Hospital. And now she works for St. Jude Children's Hospital. She was chosen to be on the crew. So she's actually, pretty crazy. They have the second person announced. So don't forget the crew so far is just Jared Isaacman, who is the one that is funding all this. And
the money guy.
The money guy, yeah. And the pilot guy. I mean, this guy is like a record-setting pilot. He's a pretty outstanding human being. So he was the... They have different names, but yeah, the Hope seat is now Haley Asinix?
Arcano?
Yeah, I love how you didn't even try to pronounce it.
Mm-mm, no chance. But then there's still the Generosity and the Prosperity seats available. So Generosity, just anyone that donates to St. Jude has a chance to get a seat on this mission. And Prosperity, those people that want to start a shop using the Shift 4 shop, can have a chance to win too. So this might be one of the biggest giveaways ever. If you think about the value, the cash value of this, I mean, it's got to be, they charged NASA like $55 million. This is probably a lot cheaper because they're using a reflown booster. They're not going to the ISS, all this stuff, but it's still probably like a $15 or $20 million prize.
Mm. It's better than a roadster.
Better.
So I think I heard that she is or will be the youngest person to go into space.
I didn't see her age, but I was hearing that she is currently. She is.
And the first person with a prosthetic to go into space, because she lost, I think, part of her leg when she was a kid.
Oh, dang.
Now, what's this about Simone going to space, Tim?
Well, she's trying to. Simone Yetch, it looks like Geertz. The queen of robots, of poopy robots, is trying to do the Prosperity seat. So she's trying to, open up a Shift 4 shop, and she's applying to try to do it. So,
Yeah, I saw her post and I was like, well, I don't get it.
They're valuing it at $2.21 million. There's no way. There's no way you could fly and buy a ride on a Dragon capsule for no way.
I mean, that's like Tim Dodd merch money right there. I mean, I think you've got a shot, Tim.
If they're $2.21 million to fly for 4 days on a Dragon capsule, then I think we're going to be seeing a lot of these, because that would be insane.
Yeah, you'd have a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I'm being corrected, by the way, that the youngest, she would be the youngest American. I didn't know how old she was. I just read that somewhere. But yeah, apparently German Titov was 25 and Valentina Tereshkova was 26.
Cool. Oh, so likely the 2.21 million is what you'd have to pay in tax.
Oh, yeah. Because I was going to say, do they have to pay taxes for this seat?
I think I recall him saying he was going to cover the cost of taxes.
But then how does he do that? Because if he pays them, if he gives them money for taxes, that should also count as, you have to pay tax on that.
Taxes on that. But then he'll do that again. He'll cover that.
In the end, it's $1 billion a seat. All because taxes. And this is why California sucks.
There you go, guys.
We solved it.
You're such a Marxist, Ben.
Yeah, you know me. I did want to mention one thing. I don't know if this was even on our docket here, but it would have been a good segue earlier, but Tim stole that with a non-segue. So
You're welcome.
Tesla co-founder JB Straubel, who we all know and love, who left the company a little while ago, I don't remember when, a year or two ago, is making headway on his battery recycling company called Redwood Materials. So if you guys aren't familiar, that's what he left to do, was essentially start a battery recycling company. And they've now, according to them in a statement here, they've reached an agreement to recycle scrap and defective battery cells for Envision AESC, which manufacture batteries for the Nissan Leaf in Smyrna, Tennessee.
Smyrna. Actually, Smyrna, Georgia. I don't know about Smyrna, Tennessee.
Who named this? I need to.
Bob Smyrna.
Seriously? Is that someone? Tell me that's true. That would be my favorite thing ever. There was a comedian that had a joke like this, right? He was like, you know, we want to pay off the deficit and stuff. Why don't we just like sell one of the Dakotas to Germany? You know, no one cares. You're just driving through, you know, in the Midwest, and all of a sudden you're in Germany. You know, it'd probably spruce the place up. So, anyways, long tangent. But apparently they started the company in 2017, and now with this, they're going to be able to recycle this. And according to what they do with the batteries, Straubel commented that we bring the materials back to a very clean and sort of fundamental state, so there is no loss in effectiveness. It's actually indistinguishable whether there is cobalt coming via an old battery or from a mine. So for people concerned about cobalt conflict materials, which I know Joe did a video on, and yes, it is as bad, if not worse, than you could possibly imagine. Here is, you know, evidence that we are able to recover these. And my friends over at Fully Charged actually did a whole episode about a company in Europe that's doing this with batteries over there as well. So, you know, EVs are killing the planet. You know, they're highly recyclable, as it turns out. Not everything, but the stuff that's kind of the most important stuff is recyclable. And here's an update from good old JB Straubel.
I've been curious what he's up to with that company. I find it very interesting.
I mean, wouldn't you just buy an island and just disappear if you were him? You know?
No.
You're like, yeah, I did enough for the world already. You know, it's good for some me time.
Well, but part of that to me is also like, you know, he was one of the guys behind electric cars and battery technology and everything. And he clearly saw that as a real need.
I mean,
that needs to be handled. And so he just took it upon himself to do it.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of, you could probably credit him with Tesla more than anyone, because if I understand correctly, the story goes that the AC propulsion guys, which were, what'd they make, the T0 or something? It was this like concept car, but they were the ones that came up with, well, let's just put a bunch of battery cells together with a bus bar and modules and packs. And they made a 300 mile range EV when, you know, the next best thing was like a joke. And so their cars were like sexy and sporty and fun. And JB was the guy that was geeked out on this, and he connected Elon with these guys. And then later, Tarpening and Eberhard, Martin and Mark, I forget which one's which, they actually worked with the AC propulsion guys, licensed their software, and came up with the Tesla Roadster. Enter Elon Musk, fresh off his sale of PayPal, or his stake in PayPal, and he dumps a bunch of money into it, goes broke practically, And that was the founding of Tesla Motors. So I think JB was kind of the glue that actually held it all together in the very early days. So
yeah,
absolutely.
Hmm. Interesting guy.
Yeah.
Well, what else are you guys working on?
What you doing, Ben?
Nothing.
What you doing, Ben?
I got nothing.
Where are you right now? First? Are you in your new studio?
This is the new studio. Yes. It only took an hour and 45 minutes before we got a comment on it. So recording a lot of online courses is what I've been doing. Tesla stuff, been having fun with these short videos, posting those kind of.
I was going to ask about that. I don't know if you've been doing that.
Yeah, well, it seems like YouTube is really pushing these. And in terms of the type of content I produce where there's a lot of like breaking news stuff, it's great that you can literally put out a 1 minute video because that just takes you, you know, 15, 20 minutes to edit and throw together. Whereas like before you might want to do a full video on it, but then you have to like come up with 9 other minutes of stuff that is like really just there to please the algorithm. So experimenting with that a lot. That's how we're, you know, that's how YouTube is tells you to do. It's like, you know,
I don't please the algorithm.
Yeah, you're an anomaly there. anyways, but I'm getting a fun thing installed at my house this week. So I have a video coming out on that in a couple weeks. It's a smart electric panel. So imagine it replaces your current electric panel, but it's smart in that I can control all the circuits with my phone. I can see energy usage by circuit. I can track all that. It's just like a whole new thing going on. So I have some more of that. And then I also have the 1 year review of those water panels that I got at my house coming up, which they sent me the data on. And for almost every day for the past 12 months, I've been generating about a case of Costco water bottles on my roof every day. Wow. Yeah. Now, there's a lot of factors that play into our favor. Like, notably, it's very sunny here, so we have a lot of good solar energy. And it's also the relative humidity for the past 12 months in San Diego, 65%. Jeez. That's high, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was like, man.
See, I feel like that I could get a lot out of that here. It's pretty humid here, generally.
Yeah. I mean, and the company's based in Phoenix. So, like, anything above 10%, they say, is going to work. But, you know, obviously, the more humid, the better. Yeah. So I probably have better results than maybe some other folks. But I'm going to be doing some stuff there on that as well. So lots of fun, interesting projects coming up that I think are more, you know, deeper dive videos that I want to get into. So what about you, Joe?
I got a video on Monday on Henrietta Lacks.
Don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Does that name ring a bell? Anybody know?
No idea.
Henrietta Lacks was a woman who died in 1951. She died of cancer, and they did a biopsy, and that biopsy led to an immortal line of cells that have caused or that have helped so many different medical advancements over the years that it's hard to even.
Yeah. I have heard of this, actually.
Yeah. So for some reason, and we still aren't completely sure why, her cells just keep dividing and keep replicating, and she has an immortal cell line. So she's still out there, and the world is benefiting from it. It's a whole story.
Hashtag demigod.
What are you titling that? Like, how do you title something like that? That, you know.
Well, so there's a pretty famous book at this point called The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. Which I wouldn't name it that because that's the name of the book, but HeLa cells are what they're called. They're named after her. I don't know. I'm thinking of naming it something like the immortal woman who has saved millions of lives or something like that. I don't know. Debating.
Yeah.
Clickbaity. Can I get it? Yeah. This woman died of cancer. What happened next will blow your mind. Yeah.
You'll never believe what happened next.
The top 10 reasons why her cells are. Oh. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
The top 10 cells that have been studied.
It's a really interesting story. And so that's why I'm doing that's a video. On. Yeah.
Sweet.
Tim, are you ready to shoot there or you're wood chipping still?
Well, I have a video that's shot and I've been unable to work on it because I've been working on the studio. And unfortunately, my editor is still Dr. Busy Pants. So he can't even, you know, he can't even help me right now, Andrew, with the video. So. Step one for me is get the studio operational so that we can catch SN10. Step two is whenever I have some free time finally, or like time to sit and not be in sawdust, then that's gonna be the belly flop video. I got like I got like 2/3 of the way done with it. It's just that it needs a ton of animations, like a ton of animations. So at this point, it probably makes sense for me to release that after SN10, so I can add any, you know, anecdotal things that may have happened in SN10, because I talk about, like, as of the making of this video, some have blown up, you know, or whatever. Like, what if it, you know, lands or whatever? I should probably make sure that it's not super, you know, dated.
Are you, because you had like a Mac Pro at your house, right? Mm-hmm. Are you going to hook up the new studio stuff? I mean, how are you editing remotely like that? Or Andrew's just doing it all?
Well, I edit everything. I've had to do this entire video by myself, and I'm doing it just on my laptop. My laptop actually can edit surprisingly well. Like, it, I don't know why. It feels like it almost does better than my dedicated MacBook.
Or
my,
is this my one Mac of the Pro. New M1s?
No, those M1s, though. Yeah. If Premiere starts running really stable on an M1, and I would have to do that because,
Yeah, I know a few friends that have them, and they're just in love with them. But they're all Final Cut users, so...
Yeah.
You know, they're in love with anything Apple does, regardless of how good or bad it is.
Well, the 18-hour battery life would be pretty insane, or 17 or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I got one for Jenny for that reason alone.
Crazy. But yeah, so we'll see. But for sure next week, I guarantee, because I have most of it done now, and I'm going to go finish up the rest of it. Next week, I will be sitting in my new studio.
Woo.
Yeah. It'll be awesome.
All right. Party.
So
cool.
Cool.
Until then, guys, we'll see you
in my new studio.
Your nude studio. Hey, guys, thanks so much for watching and for listening. We really do appreciate it. We couldn't do it without you.
Yeah, and if you want more of us, you can consider becoming a Patreon member, where you can get early access to episodes, you can listen to us record live, join our awesome Discord community, or get your name in the show credits.
So head over to olfpod.com/Patreon to learn more. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.